Hey everybody, welcome to Peck Report. I have some fascinating stuff for you today. Now, my timeline is a little messed up. At the time of this recording, I am at the Defender Conference, first annual Defender Conference in Branson, Missouri, and I am recording Peck Report from my hotel room. So I don't know exactly when all of these are going to air and how it's all going to work. But we have some interesting things. We got to talk about how anti-Semitism is on the rise in the UK and it's bleeding over into the US. We're seeing quite a bit of that. And there's been some recent news on that. But also after that, I have an interview to show you with Shelley Neese, author of the Copper Scroll Project. And she's going to explain some of the ministries, a couple of the ministries that Daily Renegade supports. So, you know, I've said before, 20% of your membership fee actually goes to other ministries. And St. Jude. St. Jude's isn't really a ministry. It's a children's hospital, but they took really good care of my son, Nathan. So, they get a percentage. We also support a pro-life, movement. We support, Tom Dunn's daughter, who is, they're both actively involved in the pro-life movement. So we support them. One of these days we'll get Tom on to be able to explain it more and talk about it more. But today we have Shelley Neese to explain what I've also talked about, the ministry efforts that we have in the Middle East. And she's the one that's heading that up with the Jerusalem Connection and the Copper Scroll Project. So we're going to be talking about that in just a little bit. And then we are going to have some members only content as well. But before we get to the interview, and again, I've only just now conducted the interview, so I'm probably going to upload that at the time of this recording today. I'm probably going to upload that to YouTube for people. But so you might have already seen it, but just in case you haven't, I'm going to put that at the end of this video as well. And that'll be in the free part of the Peck Report, not the members only. We do have some stuff for members only as well. But the first thing that I want to talk about, there was a headline recently from BreakingIsraelNews.com, and it says, the first 6 months of 2019 mark highest level of anti-Semitism in the UK ever recorded. And we see how this bleeds into the US. I mean, we see it a lot on the Democrat side of, you know, our American politics. And, you know, of course, they're the ones that want to scream that conservatives are racist while they have this really, really big anti-Semitism problem on their own end. But unfortunately, you find some of this stuff creeping up in the church as well. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of, like, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitist rhetoric that has infected its way into the church. And, I'm all about wanting to educate people on why, you know, why we stand with Israel, but also for the people who do stand with Israel, you should know why you do that. You know, it has to be more than just because your pastor told you to. Like, you got to have an actual reason for it, because some people are going to ask you, well, you know, why do you stand with Israel, not some other country? Aren't we all human beings? Aren't we all, shouldn't we try to get everybody saved? And it's like, well, you know, yes, obviously we should try to get everybody saved. But that is not a reason to not support Israel at all. So there are a couple of ministries that really do work towards that effort that we'll tell you about in a little bit. So this story, it says that during the first 6 months of 2019, the highest number of anti-Semitic incidents to date were recorded in the United Kingdom in comparison to the same period in previous years, according to a new report published on Thursday by the Community Security Trust, or CST. So the CST recorded 892 anti-Jewish incidents between January and June 2019. That's a startling rise of 10% from the first 6 months of 2018, with social media attacks accounting for 384 of them. The total number included 710 abusive acts, imagine that, such as verbal abuse and anti-Semitic graffiti, and 85 incidents classified as assaults, an increase of 37% of the same time of incidents recorded in the first half of 2018. Imagine that, a 37% increase in only 1 year of assaults against Jewish people, 85 incidents. That's insane. During the first 6 months of 2019, 225 anti-Semitic incidents targeted random Jewish individuals. At least 110 incidents were aimed at victims who were visibly Jewish. 22 anti-Semitic incidents targeted synagogues, and 16 incidents had synagogue congregants, or rabbis targeted on their way to or from prayer services. Now, it's kind of cliched to say, but can you imagine if these numbers occurred against Muslim minorities here in the States? You know, mainstream media, they would never shut up about it if that was the case, you know? But when it's against the Jewish community, dead silent. The mainstream media is dead silent because the mainstream media is highly left. They're left leaning to say the least. They're far left. The only channel that you might hear it on, and only on some shows, would be Fox. But that's one out of all the rest. The rest you don't really hear this stuff because it doesn't fit their narrative. And because I'm sure you know as well as I do who is likely committing most of these attacks. So, of course, because of that, they're not going to report on it. CST reported that almost two-thirds of the 892 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in Greater London and Greater Manchester, the two largest Jewish communities in the United Kingdom. Of the rise in anti-Semitic incidents, CST Chief Executive Dave DeLuce said, quote, "The problem is spreading across the country and online. It reflects deepening divisions in our society, and it is causing increasing anxiety in the Jewish community. It will take people of all communities and backgrounds standing together to turn the tide of hate around," end quote. And that's absolutely correct. This should not be like a bipartisan issue. That's ridiculous. This should be something that goes beyond politics. And, you know, of course, I would say this about any people group. You know, we're not supposed to be going and abusing anybody. You know, our own Bibles teach us that even if you consider somebody an enemy, even if you have that type of view of somebody, you're still not supposed to hate them. You're supposed to pray for them, and you're supposed to love them. That is the correct course of action. Yet somehow, a lot of this anti-Semitic stuff has creeped up into the church, and it's getting more widespread. It's becoming popularized, and it's extremely dangerous. Now, like I said before, I don't believe that you should support Israel ignorantly. You should know why you're doing it. And just because you support Israel, it doesn't mean that you support everything that goes on there. We're going to, in this interview, you're going to find out how there's a ministry effort right now to a pro-life ministry effort to women in Israel, because they have some of the highest abortion rates in the world, of course, but so do we. And see, that's the thing. You don't support the things that you disagree with. You know, of course, you're going to find pride parades and stuff in the Gaza Strip, just like you're going to find it in San Francisco. Does that mean that you hate America? You know, you can't just look at the bad stuff that you don't agree with and then just say, well, then I'm not going to support that country at all, because all those bad things are happening in your country too. Do you not support America? Of course we support America. We just know that it could be better. It could be improved. Because we love America so much, we want to see it prosper, we want to see it improve, and we want to get this filth out of there. Same with Israel. Because we love it so much, we want to see Israel prosper, improve, and get the filth out. So there are people in the church, unfortunately, who have fallen into this new fad, this trend now of hating the Jews. And being critical of a belief system is not the same as hating somebody. Just recently, at the time of this recording, if I have my order correct, I don't know if I do. I don't know when these are going to be aired. But yes, in my time, yesterday, I recorded a video about Tulsi Gabbard. Pray for Tulsi Gabbard. That was the title. And in that, I criticized her spiritual beliefs. You know, because she's holding this dualistic, you know, part Christianity, part, like Hindu belief system. And I spent an hour going through her about section on her page and, you know, criticizing how you can't really have both of these things. Doesn't mean I hate her. I want to see her accept Jesus. I would love to call her sister in Christ someday. I would love to see her in heaven with the rest of us. So that type of criticism, it doesn't come from a place of hate. It comes from a place of love. So criticism, as long as it's towards those efforts, it's fine. You know, if you're criticizing things that happen in Israel because you want to see Israel do better than what they're doing now, then by all means. But if it's coming from a place of hate, where you just hate the people because they're Jews, and or if you find yourself repeating lines like, well, they're the ones that killed Jesus and all this stuff. Look, that anti-Semitic stuff, it doesn't further any cause. It doesn't help anything. It doesn't make anything better. And all it does is lead other Christians to being ineffective. Because if you have views like that, if you have beliefs like that that do come from hate, you are going to be ineffective. You're not going to be able to... You're not going to be able to enact or inspire any change that might actually make the situation better. Actually, that being ineffective, that's where the enemy can use you best. So I believe this whole anti-Semitic movement in the church is a huge, huge satanic deception. I mean, it's an old deception. It's been going on since Israel was even formed. It's a very old deception, but we're falling for it even today in 2019. So... Those of you who are members of Daily Renegade, you know that I've talked about the ministries that we support, how 20% of your membership fee does not go to us. We send it out to other ministries. You know, we don't want to be a stagnant pond. We want to be a free-flowing river. You know, we want to build up our ministry, but we want to help other ministries too. So I mentioned what those are before. So for two of those, 10% of your membership fee goes to what is going to be explained in this interview with Shelley Neese. She is the author of The Copper Scroll Project. I actually think I have an introduction in the interview, so I'm not going to introduce the whole thing here. But this way, you can hear straight from her what your money is going to. And it's some extremely beautiful things. I'm proud to be a part of it, and I know you are too. So watch this. Hey, everybody, Josh Peck here. I had to remember to look in that camera. I have a camera next to a camera, so it's a little confusing. Josh Peck here. Hope you're all doing well. What a great way to start a video. Well, I've got some I've got some exciting news for you today. So I've been telling you for quite a while at Daily Renegade, if you buy a membership for $10 a month or $100 a year, that 20% of those funds goes to various causes. You know, we got a pro-life cause, we support St. Jude's, and then we have a couple other ministries. Well, those two other ministries I want to talk about today, and actually my guest, Shelley Neese, my good friend, author of The Copper Scroll Project, she is involved with both of these ministries. Hi, Shelley, how are you doing?
Hey, Josh, good.
glad to be talking
with
you.
Camera.
I hope so, because they're going to be really angry if you don't.
Right.
They're going to cancel their memberships. I'm not going to support this person. She can't even find the camera.
It's a baseline skill.
It is. You got to at least have that if you're going to run a ministry.
Right.
So tell us about what is the Jerusalem Connection. When people buy a membership, you know, a percentage goes to that. What are they supporting? What is the Jerusalem Connection? How did you get involved in it? And I guess those are the questions.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you.
Absolutely.
And thank you. Thank you for your support. It is not something that we take for granted. Jerusalem Connection has been around since the 80s. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it was one of our main missions was Aliyah from Russia. You know, there was a lot of persecution of the Jewish people in Russia and mm-hmm. a lot of inability to be able to afford to make Aliyah to Israel, but the desire was there. And so in the beginning, that was one of the biggest pushes of Jerusalem Connection, was helping Christians fulfill that prophetic role of helping Jews return to
right.
Israel. And so just as different needs have you know, whatever Israel's most pressing need is, we mm-hmm. try and be responsive to that, because
awesome.
Jerusalem Connection is an organization that advocates for Israel and the Jewish people. It's our belief that a lot of Christians are reflexively pro-Israel, that in their gut they know that this is God's covenant people, but they're not educated on it.
Yes, yeah.
So their kids are going to go to college, or they're just going to face, you know, a hostile environment where Israel's being attacked. And you don't have to go very far for that with boycott, divestment, sanctions, and university campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know how to defend Israel's basic right to exist.
There's even a lot of that in the church today.
For sure.
Oh, man.
Or just fear to preach about Israel from the pulpit. And so a lot of that just comes from a lack of knowledge and education about Israel's modern history, its ancient history, and how those two connect.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our primary missions is always just to have Israel out in front of Christians and to be teaching Christians, like, I know that the Holy Spirit and that your gut level check is that Israel is God's hand working at the world in the world today.
Yeah.
This is, you know, prophecy being written. This is, you know, if we had continuing books of the Bible, I'm pretty sure 48 and 67 would have got in there. That would have been canonized. And it's something that Christians are missing out on if they're not actively learning about modern Israel and watching what God's doing there and watching his hand at work in the world. Then they're just missing a great way to see modern day miracles.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
So one primary function is education, but then of course we try and be involved with Israel on the ground too through Aliyah. We actually do Operation Life in Israel, so we support pro-life efforts in Israel.
Awesome.
So one thing is, if you're going to support external Aliyah from Ukraine, France, and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Israel has a really high abortion rate. You know, a lot of the country is still very secular, So we call that inner Aliyah, to be able to support mothers to choose life. And there's a lot of great efforts that are happening on the ground there in Israel with that effort. And Holocaust education is front and center.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which you would hope that there and pray that there wouldn't be a need for, that would be something that the public schools were taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not, and they don't always teach the Holocaust with Israel kind of being an end result of that and what this means and how we can see God in that. And I mean, there's a theology of the Holocaust even of just really being able to deal with that in our own faith. And so we do a lot of Holocaust education actually through art.
Oh, cool.
We have something called the Auschwitz Album Revisited.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually one of the founding members of Jerusalem Connection was an artist in DC, really well-known artist. And so there's a album called the Auschwitz Album, and it's the only surviving evidence that we have of the selection process at any of the concentration camps, but this is from Auschwitz. And it's from a Nazi lens. You know, it's a Nazi that's taking these pictures, scrapbooked these pictures, and it was a survivor after the camp was liberated who found this album.
Wow.
And so this artist, Pat Mercer Hutchins is her name. She's actually passed away a few years ago from cancer, but this was her last life works project. I mean, she did 40 of these paintings while she was in chemo. And so she would take mothers or take children or individual rabbis out of the pictures and paint them as a way to honor them. Because a lot of these pictures, you know, there might be 200 people just deboarding the train.
Right.
And so she would try and select individuals. And it's been an amazing journey even with that, because sometimes it's been survivors who recognize themselves or their communities in these
wow.
pictures. And so some really beautiful stories have come from that. And I live in Virginia. Mm-hmm. We've worked with the Virginia school system and Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum in Israel, to educate public school teachers that actually are teaching the Holocaust in the classroom and feel really ill-equipped to do it and to handle it. So that's another thing that we do. And lastly, there is a project we call the Lev Project. Mm-hmm. And so it's this couple who has a lot of experience working in Hungary. Their names are Larry and Dee Dee Miller, and they are actually in Hungary now working with Holocaust survivors who are still in Hungary, helping them just with all kinds of things, gardening, being able to just, a lot of these Holocaust survivors are having to choose between rent and utilities. And so just helping them navigate those life comfort issues as well.
That's fantastic. That's amazing. And I'm thank you for explaining that, because I would not be able to, you know, put it so eloquently or in so many words. And so I'm glad that, you know, people can have that information.
Well, there's a lot you do put eloquently in a lot of words. So I'm glad
you leave something to me. You flatter me. But
I feel like your viewers should know that your room was packed today.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, if you want to talk about me for a while.
He had the 8 a.m. talk at the Defender Conference today, and he thought that three people would show up because it was a real late night the night before. And instead, the room was packed out, as your colleagues predicted it would be. So,
you and Jim Barfield, which we should talk about Copper Squirrel too. Sure. But you guys had the last final presentation, last night. And I'm thinking, all right, they got everybody all hyped up and excited. Everybody's going to crash at 2 a.m. and they're going to get up at noon, and I'm going to be one of them.
But it shows Skywatch viewers are diehards.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Because they are just not getting that much sleep.
That's right. Yeah, that was pretty cool to see. I'm really really happy about that, and thankful for everybody that watched it. That brings us to the Copper Squirrel, because this is another ministry effort that we support too, because what a big deal it would be for the Jewish people to have their history back. So can you explain what the Copper Squirrel kind of is? I know that's a long story. Sure. That you could talk about for 3 hours, but just briefly for people, for people who want more information, I looked at the wrong camera again. For people, I'm so used to looking at that. For people who want more information, just recently, within the past 3 or 4 months or so, I interviewed Jim Barfield and Shelly Neese on the whole Copper Squirrel project. So if you missed that, you can go back and watch it. I believe it's still on YouTube, unless they deleted it. If they did delete it, you can become a member at dailyrenegade.com and get it there. What is the Copper Squirrel, and how is that like ministering to the Jewish people? What's the latest with that?
Okay, well, so this is like when I put on the Copper Squirrel project and take off the Jerusalem Connection hat. So the Copper Scroll is a 2,000-year-old ancient treasure map. I always feel weird about saying that, but just go Google that, and you'll find that out. Mm-hmm. And so that, if that isn't crazy enough, there's a man named Jim Barfield, who's a believer and who applied arson investigation skills, mm-hmm, to the Copper Scroll, which oddly nobody has ever been able to figure out, even though it's this verbal treasure map that seems really specific and yeah, it's inventory. So you would think, I mean, a lot of the flash of the obvious always seems to be, well, why hasn't anybody gone to look for this?
Right.
And it's treasure that's connected with the Jewish temple. So that's really important piece of this. And so this has been a 10-year long journey, mm-hmm, from the time that Jim Barfield was able to solve the Copper Scroll, to meet with the Israel Antiquities Authority, to have the first excavation, and then Qumran closes officially as an archaeological site. And so just all of this drama that's been happening for the last 10 years. But we are, moving forward. And I will say,
awesome,
that Israel is emboldened right now in a way that they haven't been for the rest of the history of the Copper Scroll Project. Mm-hmm, we had a different U.S. administration, mm-hmm, over the first 8 years of the Copper Scroll Project's history. And so there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of fear around progress in archaeology, mm-hmm, around building in Judea, Samaria. I mean, just all of that is all connected.
Right.
And so it wasn't surprising to me to see Israel, or at least the Israeli authorities and the bureaucracy, just be hesitant, mm-hmm, about things like this that could really shake things,
yeah,
up in the,
yeah,
Middle East. And also, it's a way to fight temple denial. I mean,
yeah,
it's so ridiculous that we should even be having this conversation, but, mm-hmm, there is a massive movement in the Palestinian narrative that there was no Jewish temple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, putting aside any debate about where that temple was,
right,
but there was no Jewish temple on the Temple Mount. And so even though, we have the Bible,
mm-hmm,
that 20% of the first five books are around ritual sacrifice and how this was to be set up, and then Deuteronomy saying that this is going to be centralized and in a centralized place of worship. So we have the Bible that is repeatedly talking about historical references to the Jewish temple and its importance for the Old Testament. But also there's plenty of other historical reliable information about,
sure,
the Jewish temple, about Herod's temple being one of the most beautiful sites in the world. And so it seems ridiculous to have this conversation that, mm-hmm, whether or not there was a Jewish temple there, but it is this narrative that's really grasped hold, that it's just one more Jewish conspiracy in the world,
mm-hmm,
that they made up.
Yeah.
But the one thing that has really fueled the fire is that, mm-hmm, we have a lot of exterior evidence of the Jewish temple, a lot of archaeological evidence for,
mm-hmm,
that, obviously supporting walls and retaining walls like the Western Wall, but also artifacts that were found about the court of the Gentiles, or that this was the place of trumpeting outside the temple. I mean, there's very clear artifacts connected with the temple, but we actually don't have anything from the interior of the temple that's ever been found. There was one thing found. It was a small ivory pomegranate that looked like it had an inscription to the house of Yahweh.
Interesting.
That was actually proved a forgery.
Oh,
the pomegranate, but not the inscription. The inscription was the forgery. The pomegranate was real. So who knows what it's, but it was, it. So.
It'd be weird if the inscription was real, but the pomegranate was fake.
That's a great point. Why would I feel the need to specify? It's a really good point. I'm going to stop specifying that. But it just meant, like, it gave this moment in history. It was a few years ago that everyone thought this is it. You know, this is a priestly, something that was on a priestly scepter, and this is something from the ritual temple system. And then it was proved a forgery. So now we're back to square one in terms of not having anything for the interior. That is not surprising, given that Jerusalem has been destroyed and built back up by different occupying powers for the last 2,000 years. I just got back from Israel. I went there with my children. Trying to timeline out Byzantine Crusader, Islamic occupation, Ottoman period, British bandit. Like, you know, you're just always, it's so many layers. And so it's not surprising that we don't have anything. And there, it's not allowed to excavate underneath the Temple Mount.
Right.
So I'm sure there's loads of stuff underneath the Temple Mount, but as of now, we'll never know. So the Copper Scroll is this one last promise of this one last promise of being able to find these things connected to Jewish temple worship. These things that in Jewish historical memory are so sacred and important, which, you know, Judaism is not an iconic religion. It's anti-iconic, but but all of this temple sacred furniture is so important in just the Jewish historical memory. And so I just really feel like to be able to find these things, to be able to unearth these things and bring them out of the ground, that not only will, I hope and pray that it's just going to awaken the faith of all unbelievers, know, that this is tangible evidence of what is an intangible God if you don't have a relationship with him. That also for the Jewish people and for the Israeli people, that it will just awaken something inside of them to remind them who they are, that they're this, you know, priestly nation, that they're like the nations. And so I guess that's just my hope and prayer. And the promise of the Copper Scroll is more than its connection to copious amounts of gold, silver, and bronze and, and you know, these crazy, crazy artifacts. This isn't a treasure hunt, but this is just this huge promise and opportunity to reconnect us all with our God and the Bible.
That's amazing. Well, because, I mean, you've even said before, too, if you guys ever did find anything, that would go straight to the Jewish people. And you know, that's what I, the whole aspect of both, you know, Jerusalem connection and Copper Scroll, what really draws me to it is exactly what you just said. This, you know, I really have a heart for the Jewish people and helping them awaken to, you know, who they really are. A lot of them aren't religious at all right now. The ones that are, you know, obviously Jewish. And you know, I've always had a real heart for bringing the gospel to them, teaching them who their Messiah actually is, but in a loving way. And how do you do that? You do that by ministering to them through all these types of efforts. So I absolutely love, you know, what you're doing with Jerusalem Connection, what you and Jim are doing with Copper Squirrel Project. And we are just proud to support you in any way we can.
Thank you. And I know Jim Barfield appreciates it too. So, I mean, just to be able to follow these threads and it takes so much just time and energy and effort. He's been to Israel three times this spring, but he's staying the course, you know, he's staying the course. Having two Israeli governments in the last 6 months doesn't make things stable.
Probably threw a wrench in some things.
Easy, right. But staying the course and waiting for God's timing is key.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I almost looked at the wrong camera again, but thank you for joining us, Shelley. And thank all of you at home for joining us. So that is what a percentage of your membership goes to, specifically 10%. That's what 10% goes to. Another 10% goes to combined St. Jude's and a pro-life ministry by Tom Dunn and his daughter. So you're familiar with Through the Black Uncensored because you're a Daily Renegade member if you are one. And so Tom Dunn, he and his daughter are involved in pro-life ministry. And I actually did not know that about Jerusalem Connections. So that's really cool to hear. So I mean,
Inner Aliyah.
Yeah,
is what it's called.
That's amazing. I'm even more proud to support it. But so if you haven't had a chance to get a membership, go to dailyrenegade.com, get a membership today. You can click on the link in the description below if you'd rather do it that way. That way you don't have to type things. You can just click a link. It'll take you right there. It's $10 a month or $100 a year. Get the $100 a year because then you get 2 months for free. You just have to pay for it once. You don't have to think about it for a whole year. That's such a long time. We're going to be in like flying cars in a year anyway.
Absolutely.
It's a long time. So you don't have to think about it.
You'll be recording from the moon.
Exactly. get the annual. Oh, and I should tell people, or I have asked you to tell people, where can people find out more about Jerusalem Connection, Copper Scroll, you, all the online things.
Oh, yeah, sure. So get your typing fingers ready. So, if you Google the Copper Scroll Project, I think we now beat out Wikipedia.
Awesome.
Which is always a moment. Can't guarantee that it's every day. But so there's a website for the Copper Scroll Project. Also, there's a Facebook page now, a Facebook group for Copper Scroll Project Prayer Team, because that's really what Jim Barfield and Chris Knight, what they're really focusing on right now is just building this army of support through prayer. And so that'll be regularly updated with prayers, at least that we can, publicly communicate. And I have a website, shellynice.com, that's just specific to articles that I write on archaeology or Copper Scroll updates. And then the Jerusalem Connection has a website where you can find more about these missions that I've spoke about and things that we're engaged in with Israel.
Fantastic. All right. Well, make sure you check out all of those links. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe. Click the bell. Man, I'm just giving you a whole bunch of stuff to do. You'll be busy all week. All right, everybody. Have a great day. Until next time, take care and God bless.
God bless.
All right, so I hope that was helpful. That is what your membership fee is going to. Lots of really good efforts, lots of really good stuff. And, what better way to go and spread the gospel, to evangelize, to wake people up? I mean, there's a lot of people in Israel that are atheists. They don't even have a connection to their own history. Can you imagine if some of these artifacts are actually found? What an amazing inspiration that will be to those people to get back to their roots, to learn about a Messiah, and then maybe even accept Jesus as the Messiah. That's the ultimate end goal with all of this stuff. We want to see the Jewish people saved. Until that time comes, we want to minister to them. We want to help out when we can. So I absolutely love what Shelley Niece is doing and Jim Barfield, and I fully support them. So part of your membership fee goes to that. 10% goes to that. Again, the other 10%, it's 5% to St. Jude's, 5% to Tom Dunn and his daughter towards the pro-life effort. One of these days, we will have Tom Dunn on to talk about all of that. They do some really, really good work in educating women that there is another choice, that Planned Parenthood and these abortion facilities won't tell women. There is another choice. So there's actually plenty of choices. So I wanted to do this special PEC report to let you know where your membership payments are going, so you know what you're supporting, so you can be blessed by that as well. All right. So we do have another story to get to, but we're going to save that for members only. So if you're not a member, $10 a month, $100 a year, do the annual, because then you get 2 months free and you don't have to think about it for a whole other year. Imagine that, a whole year without having to worry about it, and you get Daily Renegade stuff. New videos go up every day, several times a day. We're also working on the website. We're building a lot of really cool stuff. When it's all done, it's going to be like its own social media site. You'll be able to post. You'll be able to do a lot of stuff. We're also building what's going to be called The Vault, which is a repository of some of your favorite researchers' videos and things. So if they ever get removed from YouTube, it'll be available. But the Vault is only going to be members only. So because of all these efforts and everything that we're trying to do, I cannot promise that the membership fee is going to remain $10 a month or $100 a year. I can promise that it will remain that for existing members. So if you're already a member, no matter what happens, we will not be charging you any extra. But if you're a new member, like say you know, say you're thinking, well, I might want to wait a couple months. I can't say what's going to happen in a couple months. You know, these costs are pretty high, so it might be that we have to increase the membership price. And if that, so get a membership now while it's cheap, while it's affordable. And you know, we're always going to do everything we can to make it affordable, but we have to make it affordable for us too, because housing our own videos, doing all this stuff, it's incredibly expensive. And you know, we have employees and things like that. So Daily Renegade is still very young and it's growing super fast. I'm glad to see it. And I'm glad for everybody who has supported us. Thank you all so much. So we're going to call it good for, we still have some stuff to get to. I actually want to talk about an article by Shelley Neese on why Moses was chosen. I thought this was just so beautifully written, really informative. And I think that you're all going to be blessed by it, but it also gives you kind of a taste of what Shelley Neese does on her own website. There's some really great blog articles there, shelleyneese.com. It's shelleyneese.com. Make sure you check that out, and you can get some more information through that in the Jerusalem Connection as to what all of this is about, what we're trying to do. So, all that being said, we're going to say goodbye to people viewing for free on YouTube and Facebook. Make sure you follow us. Make sure you click the bell and subscribe on YouTube. It's important that you do so. And if you're not notified, because you probably won't be, just know that every day we're uploading videos, and we'll continue to do so as much as we can. So make sure you do that. Thank you all so much. And until next time, take care and God bless. All right, members, thank you so much for being members. Thank you for supporting us. And at Daily Renegade, thank you so much for supporting the other ministries that we support. We're very thankful for that. Now, Shelley Neese has put out an article. This was actually from earlier this year, but I just thought it was really, really well written. Why was Moses chosen? Because that's something that we don't typically think about a whole lot. So this comes directly from her. Again, you can find the article at shelleyneese.com, and here's what she says. She says, Exodus is the most supernatural book in the Hebrew Bible, but it is also the climax, the pinnacle of Israel's story. All roads in the Torah either lead to the Exodus or link back to the Exodus. Before earth-shaking plagues and parting seas, however, the patriarchs learned of God's covenant promises through quiet acts like nighttime wrestling, stargazing, and angelic visitations. The quiet acts may have been enough to prod the conscience of those sensible to matters of the faith like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The unbreakable imperial Egyptians, on the other hand, required unprecedented signs and punishments that go beyond the explainable. Still, in all of this, God did not open up the heavens and directly order Pharaoh to let his people go. That message was repeatedly given only through Moses, the intermediary chosen by God. Unlike God's selection of Abraham, who the Bible gives no backstory, we know why Moses was chosen. Exodus selects specific moments in the Moses biography to present his resume. One key point shines through. Moses was a defender of justice. His very instinct pushed him to fight against oppression. Three times we witness him intervening on the part of the weak. First, Moses avenged the death of a Hebrew slave by killing the guilty slave master. When he fled to Midian to escape Pharaoh's retaliation, he defended Jethro's daughters against greedy shepherds. Moses apparently does not only intervene on behalf of Hebrews, but he stands up to bullies in defense of non-Hebrews as well. I'll just interject there. That goes to when people say, well, you know, you support Israel, but you don't support these other countries. Look, we support everybody, but, you know, let's say you have $100 to work with, and there's 100 countries that you want to support. Do you want to give them each a dollar that they can't really do much of anything with? Or do you want to give one $100 and maybe enact some change that could spread out to the rest of the nations? But we still stand up for other people. We stand up for our humankind. We want to see everybody saved. We want to reach the ends of the earth with the gospel. You know, that's the whole point. Continuing on, only two chapters into Exodus, Moses checked all the boxes for God's chosen messenger, defender of the weak and friend of the slave. In short, Moses was a revolutionary. Moses did not even stop his fight for justice with God. In the fifth chapter of Exodus, Moses challenged God, quote, "Why have you brought trouble on your people? I went to speak with Pharaoh, but you have not rescued your people at all, end quote. God responded to Moses in absolute terms. He assured Moses that he heard the cries and groans of the Hebrews. He remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He promised to lift his mighty arm and set the people free from Egypt. But when Moses delivered this promise to the Hebrews, the Bible says they remained obstinate in their destitution. It says, quote, they would not listen to him, being Moses, because their spirit had been broken by their cruel slavery, end quote. And there lies the last reason for Moses' divine selection. He was a Hebrew, but he was raised in the house of Pharaoh. He never tasted the bitterness of slavery. His spirit was not killed by oppression, so he retained the will to fight it. Rabbi Joseph Telushkin says that because Moses was never a slave, he had a different self-image than his kinsmen. It would take the rest of his Hebrew brothers 40 years to shake the slave mentality and see themselves as a free people. Amen, amen, amen. All right, so again, if you want to check that article out and many more, go to shellynese.com, shellynese.com. Check that out. Make sure to keep up to date on the Copper Scroll Project, Jerusalem Connection, and everything going on there. And again, I just want to thank you all for your membership and for or for those who aren't paying for a membership but are contributing either shows or contributing articles, contributing to the ministry in some way. Thank you so much, all of you. The whole Daily Renegade family, love you all. This has been a blast. And until next time, take care and God bless.